everyone. Thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. A first-of-its-kind study finds Chicago police disproportionately use force against Black and Latino residents.
Demand the return of the money and resources this president has taken from the people of Illinois.
Governor Pritzker takes aim at President Trump as he unveils his budget plan. State lawmakers are here to weigh in. And disabilities impact more Chicago adults than you might think, what a new report from the city shows us. First off tonight, federal immigration agents suspected of criminal wrongdoing could face charges from the Cook County State's attorney after she unveiled a policy to prosecute them. Eileen O'Neill Burke's office says the changes call for the use of all available prosecutorial tools to support law enforcement investigations into the use of force by federal immigration officers, including those involving a death, shooting, or act of violence. The move comes after calls from other elected officials for her office to prosecute federal immigration agents. Mourners looking to pay their respects to the late Reverend Jesse Jackson will have several opportunities starting next week. The family says the civil rights leader will lie in state at his Rainbow Push headquarters next Thursday and Friday starting at 10 a.m. The family will travel to South Carolina and Washington, D.C. the first week of March for services in both cities there. Then on Friday, March 6th, the People's Celebration will be held at House of Hope in the Pullman community. Finally, a private homegoing celebration. Well, it's not private, but an open homegoing celebration back at Rainbow Push, but with limited seating capacity. Yesterday, his adult children said some services will be open for all. And for more on times and how to register, you can visit our website. Indiana's plans to lure the Chicago Bears across state lines moved forward today. That's after a panel of Indiana lawmakers unanimously advanced a bill to create a public stadium authority with the power to finance, construct, and lease a stadium in Hammond. In a statement, the Bears say, quote, the passage of Senate Bill 27 would mark the most meaningful step forward in our stadium planning efforts to date. But the team fell short of giving the plan their full endorsement, saying they need to finish their analysis of the site. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker says while he was surprised to see the Bears' statement, team officials told his staff today that it's, quote, not some confirmation that they're moving to Indiana. A House committee hearing on an Illinois bill was set for today, but was canceled. Okay, did you wake up wondering why your car was caked in mud? Okay, we all did. Chicago residents who park outside saw their vehicles coated in dirt thanks to a perfect storm of events that started with wildfires hundreds of miles away. National Weather Service says wildfires in Oklahoma and Kansas sent ash into the air, then strong winds moved the dirt northeastward and became embedded in raindrops, leading to some dusty rain in Chicago. Some residents took to social media to comment on the humor of the muddy rain coming on Ash Wednesday, while others bemoaned the mess it made. See you in line at the car wash either way. Up next, what a study of 8,000 police incidents reveals. Heather Sharone joins us right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
Chicago police disproportionately used force against Black Chicagoans between 2020 and 2023. That's according to a first-of-its-kind study looking at 4 years of data. Our Heather Sharone joins us now with more. Heather, we have seen studies like this before, including from the city's inspector general. Why is this one different?
Well, this study, authored by independent experts who are professors at the University of Texas at San Antonio and the University of Pennsylvania, is the first to use scientifically valid statistical tools to assess whether Chicago Police Department officers are more likely to use force against Black Chicagoans, Latino Chicagoans, or white Chicagoans. They did that by comparing the race of arrestees and people suspected of crime against those identified in use of force reports.
Okay, so what'd they find?
Well, they found that in 73% of use of force incidents, the person subjected to that force was Black. In 16% of incidents, that person was Latino. In just 7% of use of force incidents, that person was white. Now, the issue is that if you're a Black person suspected of a crime, you face a higher risk of nearly 39% of being subjected to a use of force incident. If you are arrested, that risk increases to nearly 60%.
Wow. How has CPD responded to these findings?
Well, they sent me a statement that said, quote, "We know we have more work to do, and we will continue to build on the foundation we have set." CPD has said they've made significant progress in complying with the consent decree. Of course, that's the federal court order that requires them to stop routinely violating the civil rights of Black and Latino Chicagoans. That court order is about to mark its seventh anniversary.
Seventh anniversary. Okay. You also spoke with members of the coalition who've been working for more than a decade to change the way CPD operates. What do they make of this study?
Well, they're deeply frustrated that this disparity exists, and they're deeply frustrated that nothing has been done since this study was completed and published in March of 2025. That's nearly a year ago. And they say that it's simply unacceptable for this to be the state of affairs in Chicago, especially considering that we know the number of use of force incidents increased in 2024 and during the first half of 2025.
Okay, Heather Sharone, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brandis.
And you can read Heather's full story on our website. It's all at WTTW.com/news. Reaction coming in today to Governor J.B. Pritzker's annual budget address. He's proposing a $56 billion spending plan as the state faces a $2.2 billion budget gap and near weekly threats of losing federal funding.
We won't let headwinds from Washington stop us from addressing the fact that Illinoisans, like Americans everywhere, are still paying too much for groceries, too much to live. Everything is just too damned expensive. And that's why now, more than ever, we must work together to make life more affordable for Illinois' working families. I propose an agenda to address the high cost of living that makes life easier for the middle class and those striving to get there.
Joining us to discuss the spending plan are State Senator Seth Lewis, a Republican who represents cities including Carroll Stream, Bloomingdale, and Wheaton. And State Representative Evadina Delgado, a Democrat whose constituents include West and Northwest Side neighborhoods in Chicago, like Austin, Belmont Cragen, and Portage Park. Welcome to both of you. Thank you for joining us.
It's great to be here.
So before we get into the details, I want to get your sort of general reactions to what we heard from the governor yesterday. How did you feel about his proposal? Senator, I'll start with you.
So let's start with the positive first. I was expecting a very partisan type speech. I know what we just saw in the opening, but overall for the 45 minutes, it was not as partisan as I expected, not as partisan as I thought speeches were in the past. He did lay out an agenda, and that's where, let's say, our agreements and positive differ a little bit. This is his eighth speech, sixth that I have heard, and, you know, from his perspective, he says he had a turnaround, you know, agenda from when he took over. But now this is this governor's budget, and it's his vision for Illinois. And I don't know how we get from that turnaround to a winning record with this budget or his vision, because Illinois is still below average in almost all categories. And I didn't hear us getting above average. And that's what I was looking for.
Representative.
So the governor presented yet another balanced budget. I think Illinois is moving in the right direction. We're coming from a time where we had to go through a number of years with a budget impasse, right? And so we're still trying to build our way out of that. And I think Governor Pritzker did a good job laying out that plan. And for Illinois Democrats in particular, we know that we have a starting point, and we now need to work through a process to make sure that we are putting forth a moral document that shows what our priorities are and the things that we think we need to do to keep Illinois on a strong financial footing.
Senator Lewis, so the governor's budget staff says that discretionary spending this year, it's only increasing less than 0.5%. Overall spending over last year is only 1.6% higher. Your party still argues that the governor is overspending. What would you say fiscal responsibility looks like this year?
So in his priorities, he wants a tax increase of totally $728 million. And he's leveraging, I will not be able to fund education if I don't get the tax increases. So as you just mentioned, we have $56 billion and everything else in front of that is his priority, whether it be grants to study birds, new complex in the speaker's district for $40 million. Those are all taking priority over education because we need tax increases to fund education. I don't think we've actually gone in and looked at the budget and taken out some of the fluff that is in there, probably totaling $500 to $600 million that he just did 2 months ago when he said, I need every agency to tighten their belt, and we put $550 million in reserve at his executive order, and now we're lifting that executive order and we have to have another $728 million in tax increases. He's speaking out of both sides of his mouth.
So the governor repeatedly mentioned President Trump in his address. Here's another little bit of that.
$8.4 billion. That is how much the Trump administration has cost the people of Illinois. These are not handouts. These are dollars that real Illinoisans paid in federal taxes and that have been constitutionally approved by our elected Democratic and Republican representatives in Washington. If you want to talk about our FY 2027 budget, you must first demand the return of the money and resources this president has taken from the people of Illinois.
Representative Delgado, how much of the gap is tied to federal instability versus structural issues in Illinois?
Yeah, I think it's significant. When you're looking at near daily tweets that change what we could possibly be looking at in terms of our day-to-day spending at the state level, it's a huge impact. And I think the governor mentioned it, $8 billion is what the Trump administration is costing us, costing Illinoisans. So regardless of whether you are in the red part of the state or the blue part of the state, that kind of instability really impacts our ability to be able to just provide day-to-day services for folks, right? And we're talking about healthcare. We're talking about SNAP benefits for families that need that extra support to feed their children every day. So this is not like, these aren't small things. These are very significant. And these are day-to-day affordability issues that we keep talking about.
So I disagree with that approach. We just saw I'm a lead budgeteer with the Senate Republicans, and we're talking $8.4 billion, or that is equivalent to about 20% of our current budget. We're at $56 billion. There is nothing in his speech that said he had to cut or make significant changes because we lost $8.4 billion. There was no mention of it. It was a nice talking point to open up his speech with. But in reality, our budget has not suffered $8.4 billion. There is no proof. There is no evidence. It's theoretical. This may or may not happen. But we have not had to come up with $8.4 billion.
I think
that's
the challenge with this administration, right? We don't know what we can bank on. We're just dealing with day-to-day reaction every time something changes at the federal level. And it is no way to run government, and it's certainly not the way that we should be handling the issues that are affecting our day-to-day lives.
But I don't know what account to ask for the money back that he's talking about.
Okay, so I want to, because he presented revenue ideas, right? So his proposal outlined a few new revenue streams, like a social media fee. This would charge platforms with 1 million or more users $165,000 per month, plus 50 cents per user over a million. Now, we should mention there are also lower tiered fees for platforms with fewer users, starting at 100,000 up to 1 million. The governor says that this tax would bring in an estimated 200 million earmarked for education. Now, Mayor Johnson has also taken aim at social media companies in his budget process very recently. Is this an untapped source of revenue, or is this going to be bad for business? Senator Lewis.
I think it's bad for business because Illinois is now a leader in another category of figuring out how to tax businesses. The rhetoric is that we're a great place to move to, and the magazines are reporting that. However, when I look at reality, they're not coming. So when the businesses do their analysis, they say, It may be a good place, but its tax structure, its regulatory structure, what they actually do and treat businesses, they will find a way to tax us out of the state. And second of all, I don't think we really need it. I don't think we've gone through the budget and actually trimmed where we need to trim.
Representative Delgado, do you see any legal challenges over this?
I am not sure whether we can expect to get a legal challenge. What I can say is that when you're talking about companies that are making billions of dollars off of our data, it doesn't hurt to take a look at that transition from into the digital world, knowing that that's where a lot of the future of our economy is going, right? And so I think it makes sense to take a look at all of these different opportunities. And again, for us, I think this hearing this proposal from the governor's office, we're gonna take a look at it and see if this is the right approach to go and if that's where we really wanna end up. But I do think that you have to make sure that you're tapping all the sources that you can.
Almost out of time. The budget also adds $305 million to the evidence-based funding model, which funds schools less than years prior. Republicans are calling for restoring the $350 million increase that was initially intended back when this was approved. We've got about 30 seconds, Senator Lewis. Where should that additional money come from?
So I believe there's opportunities within the budget with grants and other things that we give to individual districts. I believe we can get that $50 million back, and that's for tax property tax abatement. So that's what we have cut out, that we're not even funding property taxes.
Representative Delgado.
I think if you're going to talk about adding more dollars to particular programs, you've got to be able to point to where that revenue is coming from. And again, when Republicans have issues about raising revenues and they're not the ones that are voting on these budgets, then it's difficult to be able to say, let's increase funding for this, but we're not going to identify what that funding is.
All right, that's where we'll have to leave it. My thanks to you both, Senator Steph Lewis and State Representative Evadina Delgado. Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, how disabilities shape the lives of many Chicagoans. One in four Chicago adults live with a disability. That's according to a recent report from the Mayor's Office for People with Disabilities and the Chicago Department of Public Health, which found a higher percentage of disabled people living on the South and West Sides. And compared to Chicagoans without a disability, the report found those with disabilities experience having more environmental concerns, a harder time accessing resources like transit and fresh produce, less trust in law enforcement, greater fear of crime, and less of a sense of belonging. Joining us now are Amber Smock, Vice President of Advocacy at Access Living, and Timotheus Gordon Jr., co-founder of Chicagoland Disabled People of Color Coalition and Research Associate at UIC's Institute on Disability and Human Development. Welcome back. Welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Amber, starting with you, what do you think is at the crux, the core of some of these disparities that we just named?
Well, I think both TJ and I will probably agree it's a mixture of different things. A top concern is definitely poverty. And I mean, I think that's a fairly obvious answer to anybody looking at different communities. But I think when you mix that in with ableism and also racism, those are core areas of just the things that make it more difficult to get by. And unfortunately, like, I think what happens is people with disabilities concentrate in areas where, you know, things are going to be cheaper. But I would say, though, like, I know you've had some interesting insights about those kinds of like concentrations. And
yes.
Well, Timotheus, let's get to you, because the most common type of disabilities found in Chicago were mobility and cognitive disabilities. And for those who might not be familiar, what does it mean to have to navigate a cognitive disability?
So with having a cognitive disability, It's more so how do you process information? For instance, you may need plain language material to understand the gist of what's going on instead of jargon or anything researchy. You may need visual aids as well to navigate. You may need people to help you with paperwork. So those are examples of accommodations that people with cognitive disabilities, or what I like to call neurodivergent, may need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, neurodivergent, like people on the autism spectrum, for example, those not necessarily always visible disabilities that people may not quite always recognize. Amber, you previously spoke of many people with disabilities in Chicago not living in housing that feels accessible to them. What does that reality look like for them?
Well, I think the reality looks like, you know, if you just drive down any street in the city of Chicago, you will see stairs after stairs after stairs in front of houses. And so you can see just right then that that's not very welcoming to people with disabilities. Housing, you know, is one of our top concerns at Access Living. Less than 1% of all of the available housing in the city of Chicago is accessible for people with disabilities. And what that looks like on the ground is people getting carried up and down the stairs, dragging themselves up and down the stairs. And you have to ask yourself, like, what do you really want for your family? And everybody should have a stake in seeing more accessible homes, especially when it comes down to your personal dignity.
What might a more accessible home look like? Obviously, easy getting in and out.
Yes. So it could look like having a zero-step entrance. It can look like having a bathroom that is accessible on the first floor. It can look like having you know, certain kinds of turn radius inside the first floor. You know, a visitable house is not the same thing as a fully accessible house. Fully accessible means the whole entire thing is accessible. Visitable, though, means being able to access the first floor. And, you know, the reason that we see things like, you know, you want to have a zero-step front entrance, it's not just about seniors. People might think I'm talking about older folks, but I'm not. I'm talking about being able to welcome children to your home during trick-or-treating time. You know, so a lot of kids with disabilities don't get the same kind of social opportunities, such as trick-or-treating, mm-hmm. the same way that kids without disabilities do. So it's all ages. Mm-hmm.
Timotheus, what are the barriers that people with disabilities might face living on the South and West Sides?
It could be many factors. It could be the fact that a lot of the fully accessible housing is actually on the North Side. But just because it's affordable, I mean, it's accessible, doesn't mean it's affordable. Also add to play a lot of the resources, such as fresh foods or clinics or any essentials, North Side. Whereas West and South Sides, mostly food deserts, you may have to drive further to get the resources that you need.
Yeah, so like access to grocery stores and healthcare can be more difficult. Amber, how should the city use the findings in this report?
So these findings are a great start to talk about other things, such as, you know, what if you have one map, you can lay over another map. So let's imagine that you lay over a map of how many people in different neighborhoods receive SSI. How many people in different neighborhoods may be impacted by the criminal system? How many people in different neighborhoods, you know, may have disability categories that are not necessarily covered within the survey itself? But what I think the city needs to do, and when I say the city, I don't mean just the city of Chicago, I mean city council, needs to think about how do you prioritize, you know, different things, right? But disability always has to be a priority for everybody. Making things accessible is a benefit to everybody. And I think that's the main message of the conversation that this report is starting.
Timotheus, what change do you hope to see as a result of this report?
I hope to see a change in how we approach accessibility, not only from accommodating people with physical disabilities, but also those with more invisible disabilities, accessible disabilities as well. As the mayor said, we supposed to be the most accessible city in the world. With this report, it will help us make sure that we reach out to people with all disability types in all neighborhoods.
Work to be done. Okay, Amber Smock, Timotheus Gordon Jr., thanks to you both. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And that's our show for this Thursday night. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 7 for the Week in Review. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm, righting the heaviest wrongs for more than 40 years.